Okay, well, let's dive in here. Christina's, the last question that we had to Michael from Christina was about, do we think that Wolf thinks that there's a different female, a different self for the woman or for the man, or is the female self different than the male self? What do we think about that? What does Wolf seem to tell us about this question? We certainly know what Tansley thinks. And we certainly have a different picture of Mr. and Mrs. Ramsay, right? That's an early, almost comic part of the novel where we go from kind of a Mrs. Ramsay's sense of the world, and then we drop into Mr. Ramsay's head for a couple of pages, and he's talking about P and Q and struggling up Mount Everest. It's a very different feel, right? How would we go about answering this question?
Well, I noticed a lot of play between them. She described a lot of how she felt above him in some ways, that she had to pacify his ego, and then she also felt reverent to him in other ways.
Yeah.
And then she also described Mr. Ramsay's reverence of her, but also, I think he also was not thinking positively of her at some times because he thought she didn't think it through, she wasn't logical. Mm-hmm. And I think that the focus was, for me, wasn't so much on whether they were the same, but the play between them. And mm-hmm. I really don't know if she thought they were the same.
Yeah, good. So it seems like a big interest of Wolf in this early part of the novel is trying to figure out the nature of their relationship. What makes them tick? Mm-hmm. And we get most of that view from Mrs. Ramsay, partly because it seems like Mrs. Ramsay worries about it a lot more than Mr. Ramsay. So the what makes them tick question is a concern for Mrs. Ramsay, right? She is actively thinking about their relationship in a way that it's not clear that Mr. Ramsay does. So we see more of her perspective, and whether that's because Wolf's choosing to let us live in her head or whether she's trying to tell us that that's where the action is. But we're certainly getting that sense.
I think he does think a lot of her from that one point where he questions, what is he questioning himself at some point where he's like begging her to praise him. I forget that point. Mm-hmm. It was something he was saying.
Right,
and
he needs...
The son was annoyed because he was taking all the attention.
Right.
Yeah, he needs her.
He needs her, right? He talks a lot about need. And Lily feels that need too, right? So he seems to hit up when his wife dies, right? In part three, Lily is a woman that can supply his needs, his emotional needs, right? Pay attention to me, pity me, mm-hmm. right? And she has a hard time doing this. She feels like she ought to. She clearly doesn't want to. And it seems horrifying to her. Yeah.
Thought to Wolf, there was a difference in the female and male self, which
yeah.
is different than whether there is or not. But I thought
right, in Wolf's mind. Yeah. What do you think that is, Christina?
I think it was demonstrated by the differences in their internal monologues. Mm-hmm. And they really, and I would say as well, I think there's differences within the gender for Wolf as well. So Lily is different than Mrs. Ramsay, certainly different than the older poet.
Good.
But I think the differences in their inner monologues, Mr. Tinsley and Mrs. Ramsay do not think about the same things. They're not motivated by the same things in life. For Mr. Tinsley, it's about sort of power and recognition and aggression and a sort of need to be aggressive and assert himself over other people. Whereas Mrs. Ramsay is more about, you know, more concerned about the group dynamic and having people at the dinner sort of become a focus of her and her family and the how everyone around the table is feeling and what they're thinking and how to connect Mr. Tinsley into the conversation and who will help do that. So there's much more of a social awareness and a concern for the emotions of other people.
Good. Okay, so it seems like they have a very different set of concerns and motivations that mark them out as having kind of different inner lives. Yeah, so we might give that as evidence if we're trying to say, hey, Wolf thinks that men and women are different. not just different, but that the way they think of the self is different. Yeah.
But can that be attributed to the way society has formed them? I mean, are we saying the basic self is different?
Good. So we might then say, okay, these are differences. Are they due to nature? Or are they cultural? Are we, in Wolf's mind, taught to be men and women in this way? Now, we might say, who cares? Pick either one. We're still going to call it the self. Right? We've talked about there's several models of the self that we've seen, which are cultural in nature. So that doesn't necessarily answer our question. But I think it's a very good question. Does Wolf see these differences as being inherent? Or does she think that there are social forces that make that happen?
Because she definitely, share this very different sort of interests and things that they think about, but at the same time, she definitely talks about, you know, both men and women want to be creative. You know, you've got the male poet, you've got the lily doing the painting, right? And yet it seems she sort of dwells on the fact that one gender has options to express that while the other doesn't, right? So there's this sort of, you know, there is actually a sameness, but in the underlying tendency or interest, but maybe the expressiveness or the ability to actually do something with that is very is constrained differently.
Great. Okay, good. So it seems like there are things that they share, but the fact that they have different social status or constraints, those things matter more or less or become harder, and that might end up telling us why Mr. Ramsey is a successful writer of philosophical books and why Mrs. Ramsey thinks really hard about where the bowl of fruit should go at the dinner. We might even consider Mrs. Ramsey in that way an artist, right? She has a certain set of concerns for how things look, and not just how they look, but how it represents important things. But of course, her art disappears when you clear the table. Right? And that's something Lily explicitly notices. Right? It seems that Lily is aware of the fact that Mrs. Ramsey is an artist of the transient. And that is a sucky kind of artist, if you're Lily. Right? It's unsatisfying to Lily. Right? Lily does not find it rewarding to create something that doesn't last. She wants to make something that lasts, even though her own model for what that thing is going to be changes over time. She wants to make something which captures a moment and endures. And Mrs. Ramsey's kind of art doesn't do that. And it seems like we might establish a gendering of that process. Right? Mr. Ramsey, in fact, sees his own work, his creative work, in a generational framework. Right? Others will come after him who will get to Q. Right? But he got to P, and we hadn't gotten to P before. So he sees his work explicitly in a kind of cultural framework of time in a way that it's hard to see Mrs. Ramsey's great achievement. In fact, we should see the culmination of book one as being a kind of an artistic masterpiece of Mrs. Ramsey. Right? She has the successful dinner party where she sees what it is and understands it and sees that it will fade. And then she also has this very confusing victory at the end. Right, where she manages to not... Anybody remember what her great triumph is at the very end of book one?
She doesn't say I love you.
She doesn't say I love you.
But she's able to satisfy his need for recognition. For
right. He knows that she loves him, but she doesn't have to say it. Mm-hmm. A very complicated kind of victory. Right?
Yeah.
And over what? It doesn't feel like it's over him. But it's over something. It's a triumph. Right? So another kind of transient, invisible form of achievement that Mrs. Ramsey has, which disappears. Yeah.
So an entire book as a narrator, Wolf is missing. And mostly she's having us experience life from how the characters are interacting with each other and their experiences. So in that case, is it fair for us to generalize what Wolf is thinking about men and how
Yeah, good. So we might ask, and this is a big, hard problem every time we head into fiction land, right? Although we had that problem a little bit with Nietzsche. We never know if he's serious or not. Or Montaigne, I guess we could ask the same thing. But what we really know is what Mrs. Ramsey thinks, and then what Lily thinks, right? And that doesn't tell us what Wolfe thinks. So we have to do some extrapolation, right? And we have to base it on something. So Christina started us out thinking about these monologues, the fact that they think so differently. Who's telling us that they think so differently? We're being shown each of them. That was Wolfe's choice, right? So we might try to go from that to thinking about Wolfe. But you're right, we need to be careful here that we're not assuming. I think Michael's right to help us think that maybe a lot of Lily's concerns probably are Wolfe's concerns. But Wolfe chose a name, a person, right? Chose a visual artist named Lily to do that work. So clearly it's not identical. We can't take Lily's words to be Wolfe's words. So how do we figure out what Wolfe is up to here?
So another question I have, how many female written texts are available in our period? Like, we are talking about 1500 to 2000 modern, so this is something towards, I think, early 1900.
So how many statistically, how many texts are there written by women?
And the next question is, how many of them are philosophical by nature?
Yeah.
Because that's, if this is the one which we have picked up just randomly, or this is something which is really available, maybe that's the time. Because earlier, why this question? Because there were a lot of restrictions on education or playing some different roles in the society. There was always struggle initially, at least on the eastern side. I can see that. I don't know about the western side, but and then the writing is the expression, right, which is more you're presenting your thoughts. So in that context, there we can place in the overall structure that how many really female writers are writing about the philosophy.
Yeah, good. So in some ways, that's a great question that takes us outside of what's possible here, right? We can't do that kind of homework here.
No, that's true. But what my question, so coming back to this then, this is the one text which we are identifying, which is basically the feminine self is getting expressed. Maybe the fiction form, but this might be a...
Right. So in some ways, it's even maybe a bummer, Shirasha, that we're asking this question when we get to Wolfe, right? Because it's not by nature of the fact that Wolfe is a woman that we would necessarily learn whether the self is gendered, right? So in fact, this is something I was going to mention earlier with Freud. I think our conversation maybe should have started with Freud. Freud seems to have a view that the self could be gendered, right? If you believe my line and you disagree with Rajiv, that Freud is a deterministic picture of the human condition that are shaped by social pressures, then that's a view in which the ego and then the consciousness of a person is determined by an Oedipal complex. Now, when Freud wrote The Ego and the Id, and in fact most of the time during Civilization and Discontents, he thought that that same structure, just swap the genders out, that same structure would produce that same kind of psychology in a woman. But he changed his mind about that. Regardless, he has a deterministic structure which would say, if you've got this kind of set of stuff happening, you're going to get this kind of a self, which would imply that, at least theoretically, men and women have different kinds of selves. So it seems like we could imagine a Freud for whom the self is gendered. Now, it turns out that the picture that Freud wanted to give us, he doesn't think that's the case. That doesn't mean we have to believe it. but Freud actually believed the self wasn't gender. Or he changed his mind a little bit later. But at the time of the text that we read, he didn't have that picture. But he could have. So the belief that the self is gender doesn't necessarily mean needed to be linked to the fact that Wolfe is a woman. It just so happens this book does talk about the differences between men and women a little bit. So it gives us some room to go on here. Yeah.
To go earlier to Nietzsche and the question about the self being gender.
Yeah.
I don't know whether, I mean, he talks about all kinds of things, so I'll quote it.
Okay, yeah.
Since the weak and quasi-feminine type of of the dissatisfied, of the weak and quasi-feminine type of the dissatisfied, as a sensitivity for making life more beautiful and profound. The strong or masculine type, as a sensitivity for making life better and safe. So he's got this gender stuff going on earlier, or would you think this is an out of context quote for that?
Well, yeah, that's a great question. In fact, I didn't have you guys read the very inflammatory parts of the gay science, which seem to have a lot of bad things to say about women. I find those sections very distasteful, but they're in there, and they're in the book, and he wanted them in there for some reason or another. So I don't think it's necessarily out of context. But it raises another problem, which I think Christina's distinction raises, is, which has been haunting us all quarter, but now we need to face it, which is, if we say that two things are different, does it mean they are different selves? In other words, does that quote about the feminine and the masculine, is that really talking about what it is to be a self? Or is that just some characteristics? So if we were, like people often said in American culture maybe 60 or 70 years ago, that women were more nurturing and men were more, I don't know what. Less nurturing.
More aggressive.
Right? Are we talking about characteristics or are we talking about the self? Is there a difference? If we talk about enough characteristics, are we talking about the self? Or can we distinguish between characteristics and selves? In other words, how big do we have to cast the net to permit ourselves to start throwing around the word the self when we talk about this stuff? Yeah, Robert?
Well, providing there is a gender difference between selves and that self is actually related to the chromosomes, then we're looking at a female writer. And if we're going to judge there's a difference in the self, then it's going to have to be in the voice of the writer. As far as the writer's depiction of the female and male self, I found that this falls in the typical expectation of a feminist perspective of the male being two-dimensional, steel magnolia type, boys playing with toys while women hold the world together.
Right. What we learn here is Mr. Ramsey is too much.
I put this right there in that genre.
Yeah.
But there isn't the voice here. A different voice. And it is a different voice. It's very flowing of consciousness and of seeing importance in that. The only author I could think comes close to doing that, I guess, is James Joyce. I'm not a student of James Joyce, but don't we have to really judge from the author's voice whether there's a different self here rather than in her depiction?
So Robert raises a good question. Maybe we shouldn't be talking about Mr. and Mrs. Ramsey or Lily. Maybe we're supposed to be talking about somehow that we do actually know that Wolf is a woman, and we know that our other writers are men. So maybe that's what we're supposed to work with. That's harder. Right? We identify different styles in, let's say, Nietzsche and Locke. What if it turns out that James Joyce and Wolf write kind of the same? Well, shucks. Yeah. But it seems a promising direction, at least initially, to go to is maybe the writer themselves are trying to tell us what the self is like. Maybe Wolf, through Lily or not through Lily, is trying to give us a feeling for what the female self is up to. How the female self would approach not tackling the difference between the genders, but life itself. Here's a novel about the world and relationships. That's possible.
To go back to your earlier question about characteristics, if I understand Montaigne correctly, he realized that while we have different characteristics which we exhibit at different times, I think his feeling was that if you average them out, if you looked at him over a long enough period, and the characteristics determine the person you are.
Yeah, good.
I've said that he didn't see a difference, provided you did some statistical sampling to make sure that you didn't get caught with an aberration.
Yeah, good. So on that line, Montaigne seems to have a relationship between characteristics themselves, right? That they're not the same thing, but they have to do with each other. The more we learn about characteristics, the more we see their behavior over time. We might start generalizing about the self. So here, maybe we should be doing that as well, right? We don't have as much time to deal with. One of the confusing things about this novel, how long does part one take? How long is part one?
It's
like
one day.
Is it a day?
Part of a day?
Half a day? When does it start? In the afternoon? When does it end? Yeah. How early in the afternoon? It's pretty late. We're probably talking about 4 hours. First part. So the first part's about 4 hours. How long is the middle part?
10 years.
10 years. It's not very many pages, but it's 10 years long. How long is part three? A week? Any other takers? A couple of days. Anybody want to go shorter?
No.
What?
It's like a day. It's up to 1 day.
Now we're down to a day. Anybody want to go shorter?
It starts in the morning.
It starts in the morning. They have that breakfast. Yeah. They talk about the night before.
They do.
But we're not really in that morning. And we're not in that night before. It's really maybe shorter than this even. They stop for lunch, but it sounds like it was an early lunch. It might be 3 hours, 4 hours, something like that.
Sure.
So we don't have a lot of time. Or we have a lot, right? We seem to live in their heads. I mean, that's a long 4 hours. We see a lot of those 4 hours. But we don't get a very big picture. So what we learn about these people is limited. This middle part, we don't learn very much. We learn more about the house, kind of. Or something. It's not clear what we learn in the middle. But as Lily says, it's hard to learn about people. Right? There are these closed boxes. And we only have these little tiny windows where we get access to these people. About which we're supposed to, thanks to me, make grand judgments about the difference between men and women themselves.
Yeah. Carl. But I thought that Lily was sort of a combination of people. And then Wolf took pieces from Mr. Ramsey. He wanted something that was permanent.
Yeah.
He wanted to be recognized in the future. And I think Lily has something like that, where she wants something permanent about herself and her art. And yet, and you get the transient part from Mrs. Ramsey. She has, you were pointing out her artistic abilities. And this is something that Lily also has. So she seems to be drawing on, in some ways, the best
of both of them. Uh-huh. Yeah, nice. And we might think, okay, well, who's doing that?
Well,
certainly Wolf is doing everything, right? But we could also imagine that there's a part of Lily which is modeling, right? Yeah, she spends, and I think Michael did a good job presenting this. Oftentimes, people describe the first part of the novel as being Mrs. Ramsey, and the third part of the novel as being Lily. But in fact, there's a lot of Lily looking at Mr. and Ramsey, Mr. and Mrs. Ramsey, and in particular Mrs. Ramsey in the first part. Right? It's an important part of the first part of the book. She seems to be studying them. And we might think that she's an artist. Right? If we see her as a kind of a Nietzschean artist, then maybe she is deciding what kind of self she is supposed to be, and she's taking what she likes. And the picture that she draws, Lily seems to think that she is not a very good woman. Right? She doesn't necessarily want to be a good woman, but she seems to know what a good woman is. It's Mrs. Ramsey. And she doesn't want that. So in some ways, if these are gendered selves, Lily's not so interested in being a woman.
Well, not the woman that Mrs. Ramsey.
Exactly. I mean, we might disagree with that needs to be a woman, but it seems from Lily's perspective, what a woman is not really what she's aiming at. Right, we wouldn't say it that way today. We would say Lily wants to be a different kind of woman. But it seems like that vocabulary isn't there for Lily. Lily's kind of grasping for that kind of language herself. So yeah, so maybe Lily, maybe gender is not a good way to think about Lily. Which is what's so troubling for Mrs. Ramsey thinking about Lily, right? She's worried that Lily doesn't fit very well into gender stereotypes. She thinks that's going to be very problematic.
Well, yeah, I mean, she's not married.
Yeah, right.
I mean, Mrs. Ramsey considers that to be the
game over.
Woman.
Right, so. Game over. Yeah. Right. And therefore also not a painter. Yeah.
I'm thinking about your question about trying to separate the self and the characteristics, and I was trying to do a thought experiment and put Mr. Ramsey into Mrs. Ramsey's. I'm not sure if it's her body or her role or her head, but no matter what I try on, I still think of him as Mr. Ramsey. Like, I don't ever imagine him acting the way Mrs. Ramsey does.
Right.
Which to me feels like a self distinct from the characteristics that we would describe him.
Good, good. Yeah, so alongside Robert's comments about we should be paying attention to kind of the voice of the writer, it seems also in the characterization of Mr. and Mrs. Ramsey, partly from this narrative effect, this effort at getting a stream of consciousness, we feel like we know them. And we know them above and beyond their characteristics. We could define what they're like, but we also feel like we just kind of know what they're like. Right? We feel like we know Mrs. Ramsey. And we get to know Lily, and there's something of kind of a self which seems to push through. And we feel like we know who they are. That's one of the powers of the novel, right? A novel does that, has that kind of power that we feel like there's a real person there. Instead of the real fact, which is we don't actually know what happens to Lily the day after she finishes her painting. Because Lily doesn't exist anymore, right? That's all we get of Lily. Lily is a set of a couple of hundred, you know, a couple of thousand words, that's it. But she doesn't feel that way. It feels like we can talk about Lily the next day. And the novel does that. So in some ways, novel's good at representing a self. It gives us a picture of more than its parts, even if it's unfair. Because that's one of the things art does, according to Nietzsche, right? It stands at a distance and it distorts. It gives us a picture which is not quite true. And so we've seen, not only do you see Wolf doing that, but Lily thinking about it, right? Lily is thinking about perspective. She's thinking about beauty, right? In what way does painting have to do with Lily's thinking about beauty? She's thinking about Mrs. Ramsey being beautiful. We should also remember, just to talk about beauty for just one second, I know we're running out of time. We think about Impressionism and Post-Impressionism, Cubism, the kind of period of time that Wolf is living in. A lot of the interest of the arts at that time are in trying to figure out how the visual can tell us about the world beyond, right? How surfaces can tell us about depth. And one of the things that's kind of a commonplace of Impressionism and Post-Impressionism is that you don't get to know what's behind the surface. So the depth that we get to learn about if we stare at an Impressionist is the depth of the eye that's seeing it, right? The depth we get in a painting is the perspective of the painting. So the depth isn't we get to see inside of the haystack, right? It's that we get to see back into the head of the artist. That's the depth. So in some ways, what Lily's trying to do in her painting is give us a vision of depth. The only depth she has to give us is the depth in her, not in the subject. Right? So it might also help us try to figure out a Wolfian self, right? If we try to hold on to that idea of what art is, it might help us. Okay, it's 9:06. I think we better quit for the night. I guess we have no choice but to do a little mini wrap-up with Wolf, although I have to tell you, I'm not sure I've got any interesting things for you. I'll try to think of something to say in a week, but maybe I should resist that because maybe we'll just take another hour to talk about Wolf. So we have 2 weeks off. I commend you to enjoy Proust. You have a long, kind of complex set of readings on the back page of the syllabus. I think all of the readings are up in PDF form online, but if you're going to buy some volumes, there's two strategies here. The first one is the most fun to buy because you can just sit down and start reading it. And it's kind of the most famous, and with good reason, it's great. Volume 5 is the volume we're going to be probably talking about the most. But that maybe shouldn't sway you in terms of purchases. Maybe it's too late to do any of that. But the readings themselves are less than 100 pages, so it's kind of like akin, a little less than you read with Wolf. It's rough going. Like Wolf, it's slow, so be patient. It gets easier. But if you've never read Proust before, it might take a little getting used to. Okay, I don't have any... Oh, I guess I have one more piece of advice for you about Proust, which is that, let me just tell you in advance, although Proust has many concerns in this massive novel, he, more than maybe anyone else we've read, is centrally concerned with a clear question, which is there such a thing as the unified self? Does it make sense to say that the me now is the same me of 10 years ago? Does that have if the self has a coherence, how would we define it? So Proust is worried about that problem. He built the novel for our class. Not really, but he worried about the stuff we're worried about. He's worried about what the self is and how it has a unity over time, or even kind of synchronic unity. So we should try to be paying attention to the narrator and the narrative voice behind the author trying to help us with our problem.
Yeah.
All right, Stephanie, good discussion today, guys.